more great programming here on KBOO Portland. When the storm tore off the roof, climate changed me. When the sky told me the truth, well, I always knew that I would have to change. But do I have to die to change, change, change?
Hey, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, community radio for Portland. It is 1 minute in front of 9 o'clock. We're about an hour away from Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Before that, at 9:30, it'll be Fight the Empire with host Per Fogering speaking with journalist Pete Dolak. At 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints, and at 11, Between the Covers, David Naiman interviewing Brian Blanchfield about his book, his latest, that is, coming up all this morning here on your Thursday. We get Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch in just a minute here with news you're not supposed to know, so stick around for that. It is KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Seattle Theater Group presenting An Astrophysicist Goes to the Movies. Two evenings with Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, September 19th and 20th at the Keller Auditorium. Tickets for Neil deGrasse Tyson this September are on sale now, and more information is available at portland5.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Starting with transgender news, a transgender woman suffered a facial fracture in an attack by five men as she walked from a subway in Brooklyn last Friday. According to police, a 32-year-old victim was walking along 9th Street near 7th in the Park Slope neighborhood. Around 11:30 on May 13th, when she was ambushed, victim told NBC4 New York. Wednesday, she had just gotten off the train when she noticed a man walk up to her and she was suddenly surrounded. They yelled a derogatory slur. She tried to walk away. She says, "I was just trying to get away at that point. I just didn't want any altercation. And that's how that went. She got beat up. And then this from NBC Washington. While at the Giant department store, a woman asked a store employee to point her to the restroom and passed a female security officer standing in the hallway. The officer came to the restroom and told her to get out, according to the woman named Belcher. She opened the door and came in and started calling me derogatory names, said Belcher. She said the officer put her hand on her shoulder and arm, grabbed her, and pushed her out of the store. Belcher said the guard told her, "You guys cannot keep coming in here and using our women's restroom. They did not pass the law yet." But then Belcher called the police and reported the incident, and the police arrested the guard. I am waiting for May 25th, when the Multnomah County Elections Commission will reveal how many thousands of votes it rejected this time under the pretext of bad signatures. It's worth noting that Multnomah County has never prosecuted anyone for a non-matching signature. In other words, after rejecting all these thousands of signatures over the years, they have never said that anyone was trying to fool them. This is not an effort to reduce fraud, but rather a de facto method for reducing the left power of Multnomah voters. I have asked repeatedly for information about who does this, and what the parameters are, and I have been stonewalled, so stay tuned. I intend to find out. Continuing on the topic of voting from blackboxvoting.org, they have a report summarizing the results of a review of the GEMS, that's GEMS, Elections Management System, which counts approximately 25% of all votes in the United States. The results of this study demonstrate that a fractional vote feature, remember that, fractional vote feature, you're not going to believe this. A fractional vote feature is embedded in each GEMS application, which can be used invisibly, yet radically alter election outcomes by presetting desired vote percentages to redistribute votes. This tampering is not visible to election observers, even if they are standing in the room and watching the computer. Use of the decimalized vote feature is unlikely to be detected by auditing or canvas procedures, and can be applied across large jurisdictions in less than 60 seconds. GEMS vote counting systems are and have been operated under five trade names, the following: Global Election Systems, Diebold Election Systems, Premier Election Systems, Dominion Voting Systems, and Election Systems and Software, also known as ESNS, in addition to a number of private regional subcontractors. At the time of this writing, and again, pardon me, this is from Black Box Voting, Bev Harris. The system is used statewide in Alaska, Connecticut, Georgia, Mississippi, New Hampshire, Utah, and Vermont, and for counties in Arizona, California, Colorado, Florida, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Massachusetts, Michigan, Missouri, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, Washington, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. And this is going to be significant in terms of a discussion of why Hillary Clinton's exit polling is not matching results. Now, as you may know, exit polling is probably the most accurate way of determining how a vote is going to come out. Its margin of error is very small indeed, and has been for years and years, until recent years when something went awry. And that thing that went awry, here I am speaking for myself again, is of course these devious, no-record electronic voting machines, which are throwing elections. But let me get down to the details of this, because it's hard for people to believe or understand. This is one of those stories where you really just don't want to believe the evidence. But this is one way that it is done: fractionalizing the vote. Now, what does this mean? This allows weighting of races. Weighting a race removes the principle of one person, one vote, to allow some votes to be counted as less than one or more than one. Regardless of what the real votes are, candidates can receive a set percentage of votes. Results can be controlled. For example, candidate A can be assigned 44% of the votes, candidate B 51%, candidate C the rest. And that's how it'll come out. Because of messing with the number one. When you vote, here I am departing from the text. When you vote, it's an integer. It's a one. Either you voted or you didn't. You vote, one. You didn't vote, zero. But with fractional voting, that can be changed. Secret fractional voting. Now, more details. The summary vote tally in these machines, which provides overall election totals for each race on election night. The summary of votes cast, which provides detailed results by precinct and voting method, and the undervote count, can all be fractionalized. Fractions in results reports are not visible. Votes containing decimals are reported as whole numbers, unless specifically instructed to reveal decimals, which is not the default setting. Now, here again, I'll speak for myself. Skipping ahead, there were some details in this report, which you can find in blackboxvoting.org. The specific command to reveal this fractional jiggering has been found. The specific command is all caps the word doubling, which means nothing. It doesn't double anything. It's just a command. Anyway, returning to the text, All evidence that fractional values ever existed can be removed instantly, even from the underlying database, using a setting in the GEMS data tables, in which case even instructing GEMS to show the decimals will fail to reveal they were used. Instructions to treat votes as decimal values instead of whole numbers are inserted multiple times into the GEMS source code itself. Thus, this feature cannot have been created by accident. So what I'm describing from black box voting is proof emerging that, yes, those voting machines that don't have records, and even some of them that do, jigger the vote to come up with a predetermined outcome. And they are set up to do this. And as you'll hear in details, I'll reveal shortly, they do this when they are remotely accessed. You may remember some years ago, I complained that it was obvious that voting machines could be remotely accessed using infrared ports, for example. As you may have feared, this is what is done. So for years, we have had bogus vote results. And as I was implying earlier, it would seem that some of Hillary Clinton's victories are part of this phenomenon. Now, fractionalizing the undervote category allows reallocation of valid votes into undervotes. According to programmer notes, a weighted race feature was designed which not only gives some votes more weight than others, but does so based on the voter's identity. Ballots are connected to voters. Weights are assigned to each voter per race, stored in an external table, not visible in GEMS. And she writes, our testing shows that one vote can be counted 25 times. Another, for example, only 1/1,000th of a time, effectively converting some votes to zero. The study is prompted by two issues. First, anomalies in elections in Shelby County, Tennessee, which uses the GEMS election management system in which inconsistencies were observed in reporting of the results by GEMS. And secondly, concerns raised regarding the presence of middlemen during the election process there, so that a single individual gains remote access to the election management program, in some cases in multiple jurisdictions. She writes, the questions we examine are these. Can election outcomes be controlled with enough versatility to allow a national impact? Does any mechanism exist that would enable a political consultant or technician to capture elections for repeat customers? And speaking for myself, the answers to those two questions are obviously yes and yes. And the details are not suitable for broadcast on radio, or at least I haven't arranged them that way, given my current time restraints. And you will find more details on that by looking up the issue generally, but also by pulling up blackboxvoting.org. Now let's turn to the practical application of this in an article by Doug Johnson Hatlam in counterpunch.org, dated May 16th, Clinton does best where voting machines flunk hacking tests. Yep, that's what I said. Clinton does best where voting machines flunk hacking tests. Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders election fraud allegations. He writes, at the end of the climatic scene, 8 minutes into HBO's Emmy-nominated Hacking Democracy, which was produced in 2006, a Leon County, Florida election official breaks down in tears. Quoting her, there are people out there who are giving their lives just to try to make our elections secure, and these vendors are lying and saying everything is all right, end quote. Hundreds of jurisdictions throughout the United States are using voting machines or vote tabulators that have flunked security tests. These jurisdictions, by and large, are where former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is substantially outperforming the first wave of exit polling in her contest against Senator Bernie Sanders. Counterpunch has interviewed hackers, academics, exit pollsters, and election officials and workers in multiple states for the series Taking Election Fraud Election Fraud Allegations Seriously. The tearful breakdown in hacking democracy is not surprising. There is a well beyond remarkable gap between what security experts and academics say about the vulnerability of voting machines and the confidence elections experts and academics, media outlets, and election officials place in those same machines. In Leon County, Bev Harris' black box voting team had just demonstrated simple hacks a simple hack of an AccuVote tabulator for bubble-marked paper ballots. Eon Sancho, Leon County's supervisor of election, also fights back tears in the hacking democracy clip, quoted saying, "I would have certified this election as a true and accurate result of a vote," end quote. He also says the vendors are driving the process of voting technology in the United States. The vendors, in this case, meaning those who sell the election counting machines, the vote counting machines. So I've been talking about transgender issues, and I've been talking about voting issues. I also have considerable information on the latest on climate change, which, as I've said before, is an avalanche that is rolling our way. So I'll get to that third topic shortly, but I invite your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Joshua Holland's column in The Nation, seeming to debunk claims of election fraud benefiting Clinton, rests its case on a simple proposition. Why would Clinton need to cheat when she was winning anyway? Apparently, Mr. Holland has never heard of an obscure American politician named Richard Nixon. More importantly, entering the South Carolina primary, the pledged delegate count was 52 to 51. CNN's poll 2 weeks out projected an 18-point Clinton win. Ann Seltzer, the best pollster in the United States, projected a 22-point Clinton win. Real Clear Politics polling average projected a 27.5 win. 538 was much bolder in projecting a 38.3 Clinton win. The early full exit poll said Clinton had won by 36%, pretty close to 538's call. Tellingly, white people in that exit poll went for Sanders 58 to 42, but the final results said Clinton won by 47.5% and 11.5% exit polling miss. And the exit polls had to adjust their initial figures to a 53-47 Clinton win with white Democrats in South Carolina. 3 days after South Carolina's primary, Clinton seriously outperformed her exit polling projections again in a bunch of states on Super Tuesday, including Massachusetts, where she went from a projected 6.6 loss to a 1.4% win. Super Tuesday set the narrative that Sanders had no chance of beating Clinton in the pledged delegates. Maybe it's more true to say narratives. And he writes, let's be clear, yes, correlation does not equal causality. What strong correlation does do, however, is set the agenda for a reasonable investigation. Mocking fraud claims where there is strong correlative case and actual evidence of potential vote tampering in places like Arizona, New York, and Chicago is precisely the kind of thing that has seen confidence in media outlets plummet to an all-time low. Just 6% of the people in the U.S., about the same numbers for Congress, have high confidence that the media are unbiased and accurate. So comments and questions on the voting situation, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Leighton May writes in sciencemag.org that Earth has passed an unfortunate milestone. During the last 4 days, he writes, the CO2 levels at Cape Grim have risen above 400 parts per million. Paul Crummell, atmosphere scientist at the Commonwealth Science and Industrial Organization, wrote that to scientists. Although the measurement is expected, it is a clear warning that the level of atmospheric CO2 is entering dangerous territory, up from 280 parts per minute at the start of the industrial age, around in the year 1800. Scientists figure that the accumulation of greenhouse gases has pushed global temperatures up nearly 1.5 degrees centigrade since 1850. That's 4 degrees Fahrenheit, if you're wondering. They estimate that 2 degrees centigrade of warming will occur at 450 parts per million. Under the Paris Agreement, reached at last December's climate conference, 195 nations pledged to avoid dangerous climate change by limiting global warming to below 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels. Because greenhouse gases like CO2 and methane are driving global warming, reaching what some call 400 day highlights the importance of sticking to the global commitment to reduce emissions. Wenju Cai, a CSIRO climate modeler, says, because we reach this threshold so early, we really need to reduce our emissions drastically in order to reach the Paris Agreement's target of 2 degrees centigrade. Data from two instruments at the Cape Grim Baseline Air Pollution Station in Tasmania will be sent to the Climate Change Laboratory in Melbourne for processing, and air samples collected at the site will also be analyzed in Melbourne to confirm the finding. The point here, Mauna Loa, as you may have heard, observatory briefly surpassed 400 parts per minute for the first time, 400 parts per million for the first time in May 2013. And 400 parts per million has been briefly topped at Mauna Loa every year since. The reason for the fluctuating reading of Northern Hemisphere observatories is that they are subject to huge seasonal cycles. And by the way, you can see video animated maps of those cycles, great plumes that come out of the United States and India and China. But returning to the article, CO2 emissions from burning fossil fuels are concentrated in the Northern Hemisphere, but growing plants spread over the huge landmass pull CO2 from the air in the spring and summer. In contrast, Cape Grim has a very, very small seasonal cycle. And thanks to its location in the roaring 40s, where strong westerly winds blow at latitudes 40 and 50 in the Southern Ocean, the air is clean. So if it's 400 day at Cape Grim, this is the important part, and kind of gives the value to the name Cape Grim. If it's 400 day at Cape Grim, it's 400 day worldwide. Crummell says, that's why I don't believe we'll go below 400 for many years, if at all. So that's it. It's evened out to 400 ppm around our planet. Extremely bad news. Spring precipitation. Speaking of global warming, in Portland is up 6 inches from 5 to 11 inches. With peaks now closer to 15 inches. This information from local weather records affects you and me right now. It affects how plants grow, whether mudslides will cut loose, how well you can travel, which insects can thrive, etc. You've noticed it. It has changed, and it is changing our lives right now. You can get more details on wxshift.org and entering Portland. Meanwhile, in Japan, rather than shifting from nuclear to solar and geothermal and wind, Japan is going for coal. The Guardian reports plans by Japan to build dozens of coal-fired power stations will cause at least 10,000 premature deaths, according to a study, as the country struggles to fulfill its climate change obligations 5 years after the Fukushima disaster closed down almost all of its nuclear plants. Greenpeace and the environmental group Kiko Network said in a joint report that Japan's determination to press ahead with a massive expansion in fossil fuel-based power production, with at least 43 massive coal plants to be built over the next 12 years, will come at a price to human health and lock in carbon emissions for decades. The warning comes after a meeting of the G7 environmental ministers in Toyama at the weekend, at which Japan repeated its pledge to cut carbon emissions by 26% from 2013 levels by 2030, a target campaigners have derided as woefully inadequate. And I'll turn from that article myself and deride it and say it had no teeth. That agreement had no teeth, and it's because the agreement had no teeth that the Japanese government can just turn around and say, oh, okay, we'll just have coal plants. Now, it doesn't say in this article, but I suspect the reason is because they've already got steam generators at the nuclear plants, so they want to convert them to coal. But what's the worst? And, you know, and what flies exactly into the teeth of their agreement to go with the, what do they call it, the COP, the big Paris agreements. Anyway, that's why the agreements are a joke. No one's going to bust Japan for doing this, and they're just going to do it, and they're going to produce one hell of a lot of coal. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Ted is on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, you were talking about voting a little bit earlier.
Yes.
And I noticed when voting just the other day by mail here in Oregon that something seemed different to me. There's this optional secrecy sleeve instead of a sealed envelope inside the package. And I hadn't heard anyone comment about that or why that happened. I imagine it's simpler to open it or some machine does it, but it's a reduction in security. Are you concerned about that, Teresa?
The sleeve I'm not so worried about. The idea is to block it from reading the ballot through a powerful light,
I suppose. But it used to be a sealed envelope inside.
Yeah.
And so now my name is not, you know, I have to sign the outer envelope. And there's no separation between my vote and my signed signature. Someone could slip it out of the sleeve, see my signature, and put it back together. It used to be a sealed envelope inside, which is a little bit more secure, and I like that better.
Okay, makes sense to me. I haven't focused on the sleeve. I am concerned about how many, and you will need to check online actually after the 25th when the stats come out. You'll need to check to see whether your vote, and this is incredible, whether your vote was counted
right.
in the primary.
Right. I like the convenience. I like sitting at my table rather than going to a ballot box, but I feel it's insecure and rife. We don't have the possibility of polling the voters as they leave. We don't have any good way of telling whether they're being accurately counted. And I don't like the idea. I listen to KBOO up till the last day. There's usually something happening on the last day. There's always a push to vote early. I'm afraid I like the convenience of it, but I think I'd rather roll back to having polls.
I think that Greg Palast, Black Box Voting, and other activists and organizations have shown that voting in the United States is corrupt. It's corrupt from the top to the bottom. Your choices are constricted. The monopoly-owned media demands that you pay attention to pointless things, and when it comes down to when you actually vote, where it's important, your vote is not counted in the correct way. So we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Well, I like your show, and thanks. Bye.
Thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Sean's on the air.
Hey, good morning, Teresa. So listen, I just had a quick comment. You had mentioned Cape Grim.
Yes.
That's in Australia, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So a few weeks ago, I'm almost certain it was Cape Grim, there was an article in the paper that the Conservative government of Australia was looking to completely close down Cape Grim and the research.
Huh.
And, of course, the scientists there across the community, not just in Australia, were outraged because they were saying it was probably the most important research and location for climate change of any place.
Well, yeah, and you'd think after losing 93% of the Great Barrier Reef,
right,
that ought to make you
choke. So ironically, the very place you're talking about, there, I don't know where it's gone to, but the fact is they were looking to cut the funding for it altogether.
93% of the Great Barrier Reef bleached out, and they want to shut down Cape Grim. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, and it's not just that. Of course, you're just seeing the more pressure, so to speak, that's being put on industry to change their ways, the more you're seeing them actually try to grab more. Like, for instance, I don't know if people know, just recently, the Oregon Department of Forestry wants to increase clear cutting in the Tillamook by 21%.
Yes, that
so
has to be stopped.
I mean, it's just things like that, where they're trying to shut down research, and at the same time, they're trying to do even more harm to the very things that need less harm. Anyway,
so yeah,
I just wanted to make that comment.
I agree. And, I'm retired now, and I hope that I have more time to actually research and also just to take direct actions where possible. But I would say the next time the Forest Department, on behalf of the tree farming multinationals, wants to spray a huge area, including, as last time, our own St. John's, with something so toxic that they tell children to stay inside, the answer will be no, no, and hell no. I think that it would be very immoral to allow those helicopters to get off the ground next time. Do I even have to say that? You got toxin spray from the air? Well, no. No, you can't. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Greg Palast is on Flashpoints at 10:15, talking about absentee ballots, many not counted. He mentions Oregon's mail-in ballots. So, all right, we're getting some collaboration there. And we have one more call. Leslie is on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I want to address the importance of the TPP quickly.
Yes.
When you talk about, you've mentioned not buying products from Japan due to radioactivity from Fukushima, also with their turn towards coal. I mean, it's impossible to even boycott these people because you don't know where your food is coming from. I mean, when I buy bulk rice at Winco, I have no idea if the rice has been produced in the United States or if it's coming from Japan. And it's another reason for us to oppose the TPP. It prevents people from boycotting. Also, it's impossible to boycott Israel and the occupied territories.
Right on. I thank you for that call very much. We are out of time, and so I'll just say that watch out for TPP. It's being held by Congress. They want to pass it when you're not looking. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, going out to you via 90.7 FM on the Tower on the Hill. Other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia. Stay tuned for Per Fogring. And we are going out to you also via KBOO.FM, where you can contribute on our little contribute bar. And I urge you to do so because this is community radio. And it is via KBOO.FM that we go out to the world and all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, As Time Goes By in Shanghai, showing Thursday, May 19th at 7 p.m. As Time Goes By in Shanghai tells the story of Shanghai's Peace Old Jazz Band, performing together since 1980. Aged between 65 and 87 years, many of them have been playing jazz since the 1940s and have seen the world transform. From the Japanese occupation and the Cultural Revolution to capitalism on overdrive, the band members have seen the many faces of China and withstood government's suspicion of jazz. Again, that's As Time Goes By in Shanghai, Thursday, May 19th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Thank you.